Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Friday, and we're packed live in Los Angeles. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on Fox Sports Radio and right here on FS1. 1 hour from now, my Blazing Five, I can honestly say, I think they're my strongest five picks I've had since probably middle of last season. 2 weeks in, I feel like I know the league now. My Blazing Five picks in 1 hour. Very excited. Joy Taylor is joining me in a Friday. Joy, we looks like a Miami Heat Laker final is very close.
I don't want to get ahead of myself. We gotta finish it out. We've seen a lot of upsets, so I'm not going to say any predictions. Let's just close this out tonight, guys. Let's get it done.
All right. We're getting very close. Year 17 for LeBron James. That cannot be understated. Remember what Michael Jordan looked like in his final year? Couldn't really jump. Year 17 for LeBron. LeBron says, let me guard the hottest young guard in the NBA. He's 23. He's in his prime. I'm a power forward. I got this. And shuts him down. A, most stars don't want to do that. And B, if you give it to them, they can't do it. This is what I would call the gap, and I've seen it twice in the NBA. When Michael Jordan was at his best, the gap between Jordan and everybody else in the sport, it's the stars, was massive. Magic was the only player that was reasonably close, and Magic could do one thing better than Michael, elevate others. Michael didn't always do that. But even scoring and defense, Magic wasn't close to Michael, getting a bucket or getting a stop. The gap between LeBron and everybody else is now absurd. Let's take recent MVPs. You know, they should be close to LeBron. Giannis can't shoot, 3 playoff series wins in the East in 7 years. Harden, one trick pony, all offense. Westbrook, 3 words, out of control. Anthony Davis, completely irrelevant until he joined LeBron. Like Magic to Michael, Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard have things, elements they can do better. Kevin Durant's just a better shooter, and Kawhi right now at this point in his athletic prime probably better at getting a stop over the course of 8-9 minutes. But it's not close. Kevin Durant isn't the leader and can't stay healthy, and Kawhi doesn't talk and communicate and, frankly, doesn't elevate others. He's just great. This is unbelievable what you see last night. LeBron's now done this twice. He did it against Derrick Rose 9-10 years ago. Remember, Derrick Rose was the hottest thing in the NBA, the hottest guard, the talk of the league. And LeBron James said 9 years ago, I'm 6'9 and a half, 250. I got this. And he handcuffed him for the rest of the series in the fourth quarter. In the fourth quarter, LeBron would say, I got D. Rose. What forward in the history of the league does that? Bird, Duncan, Dr. J. He don't do that. Derrick Rose was the quickest guy in the league. LeBron's like, I got him. And Derrick Rose was awful in the fourth quarter. Last night, LeBron can no longer do it for a quarter. Jamal Murray's on fire. He's exploded. He's the next star guard in the league. Nobody can stop him. And in year 17, LeBron's like, yeah, I got him. And creates enough chaos for Jamal Murray that all the scoring stops. I mean, you got to be kidding me on this. It's just year 17. Never forget this. LeBron's son is closer in age to Jamal Murray than LeBron is. Year 17, year 13, guys quit playing defense in this league. Year 15, they're out of the league. Year 17, LeBron, I got this. I've only seen 5 athletes like this, really, in my life, where I'm not even sure who the number 2 is. Tiger Woods. I think in his prime, the number 2 was Phil Mickelson. I think. But for 10 years, there wasn't a 2. Serena Williams. Who's been the second best women's tennis player? I don't think they exist. Tom Brady. I think it's Peyton Manning, but for most of Peyton's career against Tom, Tom was the clutch, and Peyton couldn't win the big game. Michael Jordan, obviously, and now LeBron. The idea most stars wouldn't want that assignment, to guard somebody that's younger, in their prime, different position, red hot, and ascending as a star. LeBron takes it and then accomplishes it, and talked about it after.
I knew it was winning time, and Jamal had it going. You know, I told my teammates that I had him, and everyone else can kind of stay at bay and stay home. And I was able to get a couple stops, and we was able to rebound the basketball, which is the most important thing.
It's just, I'll call it the gap. I've seen it five times. The gap. Tiger, MJ, Brady, Serena, and LeBron. I'm not sure who number two is. I mean, you going to tell me Giannis is two? AD had a playoff series win in 7 years pre-LeBron. The gap. You get it about once a decade, maybe twice. All right, the game in the NFL that a lot of people will be watching. Dak and the Cowboys go to Seattle, Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. Now, what a lot of teams in the NFL do to beat Russell Wilson, here's sort of the theory. Keep him off the field. Run the football. Keep him off the field. Mike McCarthy says, no. We are not going to do that. We are going to get in a shootout with Seattle. We think we can match up with Seattle offense point for point, touchdown for touchdown.
We want to score as fast as we can, as many times as we can, I mean, you know, as far as the start of the game and throughout the game. But, I mean, when you get down in the fourth quarter, that's, you know, that's part of the game management.
Oh, you want to get in a shootout with Russell Wilson. You know what the Dallas Cowboys offense is? It's a political ad. It doesn't matter if you're a Republican or you're a Democrat, if you're Joe Biden, Trump, Bernie Sanders. It doesn't matter. All political ads are sort of the same. They're very slick. They put in music, and they always make the candidate look the best. But it's really more marketing than it is, you know, truth. The political ads aren't really truthful. It's just promises and hope, and it's slick, and it's clever. And Dallas's offense is a political ad. Oh, it's slick. It gets a lot of stats. We all think it's good, but let's be honest about it. They either score too early or never enough late. Let's go to last year. Go look at last year's schedule. And you look at a lot of those points, but let's go to three games in particular to start. Green Bay, Buffalo, and Chicago. Those games weren't close. Green Bay led 31-3. Buffalo led 26-7. Bears led 31-14 in the fourth. Those games were never competitive. When you needed Dallas's offense, it was nowhere to be found. They got all their points in those games in garbage times when the games were out of reach. Let's go to three other games against very good teams. At the Saints, at the Patriots, at the Eagles. In those games, the defense, the much maligned Cowboy defense, was actually excellent. But they couldn't muster a second touchdown drive against the Saints. They couldn't muster a single touchdown drive at Foxborough. And they couldn't muster a single touchdown drive at Philadelphia. So in three of their games, it was just a bunch of garbage points where they couldn't get into a shootout. The other team was like, we're going to score on you. They couldn't. And in three other games, when the defense played great against good teams, playoff teams, nothing. Six other biggest games last year. This is a hollow political ad on offense. They're an 8-8 football team that beat one playoff team last year. And again, this year, I see the exact same thing. I'll give you an example. So against the Rams, oh, it came down to the final play. They had six drives in the second half. Result, against Sean McVay, one field goal. And then Atlanta, they're down by 15 with 5 minutes left. Atlanta's in a prevent. They get all their points, and then they recover the goofiest, silliest, craziest onside kick of all time, or they'd be 0-2. Again, in these games, against the Rams, who were moving the ball, just like last year in those three games, against Buffalo, Chicago, Green Bay, when you had to really ramp it up, they couldn't match them in the second half. And then like those three other games where, you know, you fall behind and you need real stuff, and you just couldn't deliver. Rams in Atlanta is the Cowboys last year. When you really need them, it's either too early or too late, and it's just a slick political ad. A lot more marketing than the truth. The way to beat Seattle is not to get in a shootout. The way to beat Seattle is keep Russell Wilson on the sideline. That's what Cam almost did. That's what Cam did last weekend. Where was Russell Wilson at the end of the game last week? Watching on the screen as Cam slowly and methodically kept Russell Wilson off the field. As a Patriot fan, would you have felt better if Russell had the ball with 5 minutes left? No. You felt good because Cam had the ball and Cam was moving and Russell was on the sidelines. That is the way to beat the Seahawks and Russell Wilson.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So I'm watching Miami and Jacksonville play last night, and I'm not really thinking about Miami and Jacksonville by the end of it. I'm thinking, oh my God, New England's way better than I thought. I completely whiffed on New England. 8 opt-outs, lost several key free agents, didn't replace them. Brady leaves. New England's way better than I thought. The Miami Dolphins just destroyed Jacksonville, a competent team through the first 2 weeks. Destroyed them. The Buffalo Bills have the best defense in the league from the beginning of last year until last week. New England and Buffalo have allowed the fewest yards. Ryan Fitzpatrick against Buffalo and against Jacksonville marched up and down the field. 4 touchdowns, no picks, completion percentage 73%, passer rating over 113. Against New England, he could not move the chains. No touchdowns, 3 picks, a passer rating of 44, 85 yards rushing. They got dominated in time of possession, couldn't run, couldn't convert third downs, and had 260 total yards. I watched that Miami-New England game. Miami couldn't compete. It was over at the end of the first quarter. They moved the ball up and down the field against Buffalo's defense. They moved the ball all over the field and dominated Jacksonville. And New England is a touchdown favorite at home this week to a Raider team that just backhanded the Saints, who everybody has as a Super Bowl team out of the NFC. I have apparently made an egregious mistake on the New England Patriots. I know I'm a homer and stuff, but I'm watching Miami last night. And I watched Miami last weekend. They moved the ball against everybody, up and down the field. And we liked Miami at the end of last year. They couldn't even compete against New England. New England goes on the road and comes within 2 yards in Seattle, cross-country flight, of beating what many believe is the second-best team in the league, the Seahawks. This play, that's, 2 yards, and they beat Seattle. They're favored by a touchdown over the Raiders. They annihilate a Miami Dolphins team that gave Buffalo everything and destroyed Jacksonville. That's what I saw last night. I saw Cam, I saw Belichick, I saw New England and thought, I'm betting the Patriots this week.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Speaking of Russell Wilson, there is a picture out there where he has his hat on backwards. It's in his practice uniform, and he probably just walked out of the locker room, and he's got a hat on backwards, probably a walkthrough before a game, and everybody's like, oh, Colin, Russell Wilson's got his hat on backwards. You can wear your hat on backwards. Yesterday, at the very end of my show, I talked about wearing your hat on backwards. And fans ripped me. It was very hurtful. I did not sleep last night. Barely closed my eyes. It was very painful. But I'm going to double down on something I've always believed. And when I saw Carson Wentz with his hat on backwards after another bad performance and bad loss, standing in front of the proud Eagles, banner, I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. Let me just ask you something. Because I believe in life, time and place and location and assignment matter. There are certain things you just wouldn't wear if you were introduced to the Pope or the President. Time, place, location, assignment matters. If you want to wear a hat on backwards, in your garage, in your yard, if you want to wear it at the beach, at the gym, in your car, I don't care. Never really care. In fact, joy is my witness, I don't care if you ever wear it backwards as a baseball player, as a basketball player. I mean, baseball players wear hats all the time. What do I care? I don't even care if you wear it backwards as a linebacker in football, a cornerback, a receiver, a tight end, an offensive lineman. I don't care. I don't care. But if you are a quarterback and you have your once a week podium discussion, and the organization and the Philadelphia Eagles are brilliantly owned, respectfully built, smartly designed, and you have the Eagles banner behind you with a major corporate sponsor, Toyota, behind you. And you're telling me this for a $5 billion face of the franchise is no different than this. I think you're wrong. I'll totally double down. Let me speak slowly. Time matters. Location matters. Assignment. Let me give you a person. I don't know him. He's very popular on the interweb. His name is Dave Portnoy. He created Barstool Sports. He's very edgy. Can be very, very funny. He's very talented. Barstool Sports attacked me yesterday. Very hurtful. This is, you know, I've got children. You have to be nicer to me. They just ravaged me yesterday. So Dave Portnoy is this very raw, you know, Hawaiian shirts, sometimes no shirts, authentic, in your face. I don't care about anybody. It's very effective. But it is interesting that a month ago he interviewed the president and he wore a suit and he was a real professional and he was respectful and he didn't swear. It's almost as if, kids, assignment matters, location matters, time matters. Most of you won't be as successful as Carson Wentz or Dave. So maybe you just don't get it. But when you stand in front as the face of the franchise, don't care if you're Ken Griffey, you're a baseball player, what do I care? I don't care if you're a hockey guy. I don't care if you're in your yard, your gym, a bar, on a date. I don't care if you wear your hat on backwards. I don't care. I've worn it in my garage. I've worn it in my yard. But on that weekly podium, you are standing in front of the logo, a major sponsor. Do you know how much you have to pay as a sponsor to get Dak in front of that logo on Tuesday? They have a casino in Dallas. They pay millions of dollars. Do you know how much Toyota pays to get that logo, that sponsorship? It's not about wearing the hat. It's about the symbolism and the respect. It's why Dave wore a suit at the White House. Because assignment matters. It's the president. Like him or not, it's the president. Time, location, situation, place. You don't wear a hat on backwards meeting the Pope. You don't interviewing the president. And I believe you don't as a franchise quarterback in that weekly press conference, especially after a loss in which you were awful. Because I'm already questioning your judgment. You want to look like a frat boy? Go for it. Go for it. It's not me. It's not my football team. Bengals beat you this weekend 0-3. Wear two hats backwards. What do I care? I'm just thinking, you're not going to pressure me into believing that time, place, assignment, location don't matter. Hell yes, they matter. You meet with your boss, it's different than meeting with the intern. You meet with the president, it's different than meeting with a local lobbyist. And you stand at that podium as a quarterback, 0-2, logo, advertisers, you're trying to send a message. Remember Tom Brady in New England used to do the Monday radio show in Boston? Do you remember that? He didn't do it for money. Tom Brady never did that for money. Why did Tom Brady do the morning press conference for years in Boston radio? Got paid, probably got paid $1,000 a hit, $2,000. The guy's worth $700 million. He did it to spread the message for the week. That he and Belichick arrive at a message and he is spreading the message for the week. If they lost, optimistic. If they won, we've got a lot to work on. It was symbolic. It was irrelevant. He didn't need the money. He did it for symbolism as the face of the franchise. This is the message Bill and I want going forward. I'm doubling down on that hat thing. Wear it in your garage. Just not as a franchise quarterback at the podium.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Eric Mangini is now joining me. My guy, former NFL coach two times, joining me via the Coward Global Satellite Network. You know, I said earlier, the Cowboys offense reminds me of a political ad, regardless of what, if you're a Democrat or a Republican, is that it's slick and that it's glossy, but it's not really the truth, right? Like you're showing that Dallas last year in six different games, either threw in garbage points late to make a blowout look close, or in three games, Saints, Patriots, Eagles, where you actually needed one touchdown drive, you know, in the second half, they couldn't provide it. That I think it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. It's a lot of political ad. It's real glossy and slick and a lot of stats. But I don't trust their offense against Seattle. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and like a political ad, they're not that interesting. You watch Dallas play, and but for the grace of the football gods, they really should be 0-2. There's no way that they should have won this past game, and it's frustrating to watch. And I don't know if it's the function of they're supposed to have a franchise quarterback and a franchise running back and a franchise wide receiver, and they've gotten all this help, and there's continuity with the offensive coordinator, and there's an offensive head coach, so you're expecting a lot. But as you watch it, you don't feel like they're explosive in the way you think of Kansas City or when you think of New Orleans when they're hitting. It just doesn't seem the same way. It doesn't feel the same way. And for as good as the offensive line is supposed to be, there's guys playing in all different spots. There's been inconsistent blocking. And it's been disappointing to this point. I agree with you. It's not what it seems or what it should be.
Yeah. Now they face Seattle. Russell Wilson, I think you've everybody's always liked him. He feels different this year. What is it? What do you see?
Well, look, I know everybody wants the let Russ cook and is excited about what he's done. He's had a great start to the year. I think it's 84% completion. But one of the things that they did really well last year was rein things in. And people got frustrated because they didn't let Russell do as much as they thought he could. But if you look at the year before, Colin, he was sacked almost 11% of the time. That's like historic sack numbers. And it put him behind the sticks. It created turnovers, self-inflicted wounds. I caution Seattle not to get too caught up with either direction. Don't go the extreme they had last year where he didn't get the opportunities. But if you want to keep going down this route, he's going to default to those numbers that he had, which is the high eights, the high nines, the high tens, and sacks. And I don't think you have to do that. You don't have to be this extreme, and I don't think it's sustainable either.
You live in Cleveland, so you have thoughts on the Cleveland Browns, and you actually hear a lot and know a lot, and you used to coach them. And it's interesting because they play Washington with extra time to prepare. This should be a win for them. This is a quarterback now with some legs. It's a lot of offensive weapons, and it's a Washington team in a rebuild mode with a young quarterback. So two things. There is a big upcoming stretch for Baker Mayfield. The next 4 weeks, he plays the three best pass rushes in the league statistically, Washington, Colts, and Steelers. He has not been good under pressure. I believe that organizations make decisions privately long before they make them publicly. In a league where many of the best young quarterbacks are actually very good against pressure, he's awful against it. If he struggles in this four-game stretch against pressure, do you think decisions will be made from a new GM and a new coach who have no loyalty to him?
Well, their ability to make the decision on the quarterback is also going to be based off of how well they do in terms of coaching and managing the team over the course of the year. I think the owner has a pretty strong influence on the decisions that are made. But the greatest thing that Cleveland can do is run the ball. If you don't want your quarterback pressured, and you've got two running backs like they have, and you can run the ball as effectively as they have, it slows everything down. Pass rushers have to deal with the run first. Even when they want to tee off, because there's that threat, they've got to take that into consideration. All the play action is that much more effective. The way that they can help Baker, and the way that Baker has been the most successful, is by setting up and relying on the running game, then using the play action, and he's a different guy. If you want to turn him into just a passer, it's not going to work, and it's not going to be successful for him or Stefanski.
So sometimes I can't explain stuff. I love Carson Wentz. Why is Carson Wentz so bad right now? What is happening with Carson Wentz, a guy I love?
You know, I went back and watched the both games, coach's copy, just to look at these plays. And the Washington game, to me, was somewhat mismanaged. They're up 17-0. They've got the ball on a 2-minute drive, and they try to throw a deep out. the throw wasn't that bad. The read was exactly right. It was the receiver could have helped him and come back to the ball. So it gets picked up or picked off, and Washington goes in with momentum. They start the second half. He gets picked off on almost the identical throw, almost the identical situation. Momentum shifts, and then panic sets in, and they're going for it on fourth and two and fourth and three, giving Washington short fields. And there's no way they should have lost that game, and he didn't really play that bad. And when you look at the second game, they're down 21-3 quickly.
Yeah.
And there's a turnover early, and he comes back, and he's got a chance to take the lead at the start of the second half. And he throws another ball that's really not that bad a ball, and it's still a good read, and it's a good defensive play. But when he was really good, and people forget this, he had a much better supporting cast. He had a much stronger defense. Now it feels like there's all this pressure on him, and they're putting him in some tough situations, and he's trying to make plays and press plays because he doesn't feel as confident in the rest of the supporting cast.
Shift to Cam Newton. He and Edelman had a monster night on the road. I was surprised by that relationship. N'Keal Harry, I did think Cam would probably be a nice new fit for him. Tom, you know, I said this last week or earlier this week, is that Cam looks at N'Keal Harry as a young, talented weapon. Tom looked at him as a guy that couldn't get to the right spot. You know, but the Edelman-Cam relationship, I was surprised by how effective it was. Were you?
Look, I've been surprised at the relationship of Cam with the Patriots in every aspect. I was surprised that they signed him. I was surprised that he, you know, he's acted or taken the approach that he's taken. I've been surprised by every aspect of this, and I was probably the biggest skeptic. But I would imagine his relationship with the receivers, he's going to have a little bit different bond with the younger guys.
Yeah.
I'm sure those guys used to play Cam in Madden. And with Edelman, he just realizes that it's reliable and it's always going to be there. And usually it's going to be open and usually he's going to catch it. So I think that'll continue to grow.
Finally, Ryan Fitzpatrick, the ageless one. What do you make of him? Why is he still in the league? I mean, he's hot and cold. What do you make of him?
Well, I think the Fitz Magic moniker is perfect because at the end of each game, he's usually going to make somebody's victory disappear. And it's either it's yours or theirs because you don't know which guy's going to show up. And this has been the way he was since Buffalo. If you get him when he's hot, he is so hard to deal with. He's exciting. He can make, you know, incredible throws. And then you flip the switch and the next game, it's, you know, 2, 3, 4 interceptions or fumble, and it's just terrible. And you look at him, and he's a smart guy. He's, I'm sure, a great mentor for young players. He's probably great to have on your team, and he excites you. But then you also realize that, you know, he's going to give away about 40% of the games and win about 60, kind of like his TD to interception ratio, and that gets frustrating.
Yeah. Eric Mangini, good talking to you, Coach. Thanks for coming on a Friday. We appreciate it.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
TJ Husbandzada, he is having a birthday tomorrow. I'm not going to tell you his age. He is now joining us live. He's played 11 years in the NFL. He is deeply concerned because he said he found a single gray hair on his left cheek, and it's send him off the deep end. I just want to know if you're okay to do the segment. You're very discouraged right now.
Yeah, I'm good. I was shaving this morning and I looked and I had to pull it to the side to make sure that it was gray, and it was. And I'm like, oh, first one, here we go.
Yeah, and by the way, this is what happens not long after that, TJ. The whole thing will turn gray just like that. So
if I can get the salt and pepper look, I'm cool with that. But one here and there, I don't like that.
Okay. You know, it's interesting. I want to talk about the Buccaneers for a second. So in the first week, Brady struggled with his receivers. Second week, he and Mike Evans connect. Chris Godwin now comes back, but he's not throwing to his tight ends at all in New England. Take my audience to how long it takes. New quarterback comes in. Receivers are in a system. In your career, what should we expect from Brady? But when he's really clicking, receivers, tight ends, and he feels very comfortable.
It's going to take about four to five games. And had he had the preseason, you can practice all you want, but the tempo and the pace, and especially mainly the speed that you practice at and you play at, it's different just because of that adrenaline. It's going to take some time. Brady can watch them run routes and you see a movement in their body. He's going to let the ball go because he knows what's come next. And in practice, you see that, but the game is such a faster tempo that you might be a tad early or you might be a tad late. So it's going to take him some time to get used to the speed of Mike Evans and Godwin in the game. When you're in the slot, a lot of the timing is off. And so that's why Humphreys is getting the ball in it. And it's looked like they had that connection because you don't have, quote unquote, timing. It's understanding defense, find a soft spot in the zone.
You know, a star receiver, OBJ, admitted this week. He's like, I'm not going to get big numbers here. Like, this is a running team. And it's difficult because I'm sure, TJ, for you in high school, for you in junior college, for you in college, you know, you get the looks. You're the star. And then you go in the NFL and OBJ is a star. And now he ends up with a team where Stefanski wants to run it. They got two great running backs. Baker's not a guy you want throwing 45 times a game. Have you ever played with players that are super talented, but they just have to come to terms with you're going to get six looks max and maybe four catches?
No, not at all. And he's saying all the right things and he's saying what he's supposed to say. But I'll tell you, if he's not getting the looks and they're winning, he'll be okay. But he's not going to be okay, if that makes sense. It's like, I want to contribute to us winning. And they are best when they are running the ball. When you have Chubb and Hunt, you look at what they did to the Bengals, that they in essence won the game for him. And if he can sprinkle in a big play here or there, but I will tell you what, if he's not getting the ball because he came into the league accustomed to getting looks, to getting targets every game, it's going to be hard now once he's established himself as a star, as one of the better receivers in the league, to say, oh, I'm okay with taking a back seat. Now, if they're winning, he's not going to gripe about it, but privately, he's not going to be happy about that.
So I thought on Monday Night Football, and I love Drew Brees, but he didn't look great. He didn't face a lot of pressure. Raiders don't have a sack this year, and it was dump-off city. And, I mean, we know he's old. We know he doesn't have a big cannon arm to begin with. Do you think, as a receiver, you may not say it publicly, but Michael Thomas may know, Emmanuel Sanders may know, listen, they're just throws my guy can't make anymore. There's throws my guys can't make. Do you confront the quarterback? Do you talk a lot about, listen, man, I can shorten the route out. I mean, how does that go as a quarterback does decline?
Nothing. You don't say anything about that. All athletes, you know, when your skills diminish, you don't want to be confronted about it. And Sean Payton knows it. Drew Brees knows it. Their offense is tailored to his strengths. And they try to minimize his weaknesses, and they don't go down the field. Mike Thomas is hurt. And so his security blanket, so to speak, was not there. I recall one route in that game Monday night. The tight end was running a deeper over route, and he stopped. And there was nobody in that zone. And Drew Brees threw it like he was going to keep running. And it looked like it was a bad throw by Brees, but it was actually the tight end's fault. He should have kept running. You get probably a 15-yard gain. But if Mike Thomas is playing, Drew Brees is going to play better because that's his security blanket. Emmanuel Sanders and Mike Thomas, they're route runners. They're going to get open. They're not going to really get down the field. Not Emmanuel anymore anyway. And so it's just he doesn't have his best receiver. When you don't have your best receiver, you're going to struggle. And so he's struggling right now. When Mike Thomas when he does come back to play, he'll be fine.
Are you surprised Seattle hosts Dallas this week? Are you surprised how good Russell Wilson's become? Did you see it early? Do you look at him sometimes and think he's the best football player in the world? I mean, right now, statistically, he's completing 85% of his throws. He's got 11 incompletions on the year, and that includes facing Belichick's defense and Belichick's wisdom and Belichick's secondary. Did you see it years ago, or are you surprised by Russell?
I'm going to be honest. You kind of have sold me on Russell Wilson, to be honest. You've talked about him so much, and I watch him more intently now, and I kind of try to study him. And the more you've talked about him, the more I've said, like, golly, Russell Wilson is really good. But I remember I played my 1 year in Seattle, and when I left, I was still friends with a lot of guys on the team, guys in the front office and coaches. And they straight up told me when they drafted him, bro, golly, you should still be here one more year. This kid can really play. He's going to be our starting quarterback. I'm like, dude, he's a rookie. He was like, listen, watch. He's going to be our starting quarterback. So when he was a rookie, the guys that were there were already telling me this. Now, the defense carries him to the Super Bowl. And so you kind of overlook Russell Wilson. And then Colin Coward starts talking about Russell Wilson. And all myself and other people can think about is the Legion of Boom. And that defense has carried you to a Super Bowl, Russell. So that's in our head. But we're not really paying attention to what he's showing us since the defense is slowed down. And I'm Russell Wilson, and I'm one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And so it's good that he's showing us that. But I'm not going to lie. Had you not really made it a point, I would have still been giving the credit to the defense.
Yeah, no, I mean, Steve Young faced that with the Niners. You had Bill Walsh and Jerry Rice. And, you know, nobody wanted, you know, here came Steve Young after Joe Montana. And for years, nobody appreciated how great Steve Young was because you had all these iconic figures around him. Speaking of iconic, Cam Newton in New England. It's one, okay, listen, he's healthy. He's an athlete. I get it. I was shocked at how good he and Edelman were. I was really shocked by it. I mean, the guy was sharing snaps with Jarrett Stidham a month ago. Are you surprised that Edelman, they host the Raiders this week, Edelman and Cam are so good so early together?
It's crazy. He plays two games with Cam Newton. He has a career high in receiving yards in the game, right?
It makes no sense.
It's almost like when I look at it, I just think 1.5, that's his base salary, 7.5 with incentives. Phillip Rivers gets $25 million. Like, are you kidding me? And I'm not knocking Phillip Rivers, but Cam Newton, he said he has a chip on his shoulder and he has something to prove, and he was not lying. Cam Newton looks good. You're talking about Russell Wilson as a runaway MVP. If New England can make the playoffs, Cam Newton's going to be right there in contention for MVP if he can continue to play the way he's playing. No training camp. When I say no training camp, I mean no preseason games. He signs late. He's learning an offense on the fly. And you come in here and you do this with receivers that everybody says can't play. And I've been part of the guys that say that. And he looks so good running and throwing. I don't mind the last play. Yeah, you could have gone to the well too many times, but it was working. And it didn't work that time. Had it worked, they would have said it was a great call. But yeah, Cam Newton is playing his tail off, and he said he was going to do it, and kudos to him.
Yeah. Finally, Carson Wentz is very talented, but he's struggling. And, you know, the word is all the people that watch film are just basically saying he's pushing it. He's trying too hard. And it's interesting because he's been successful. We know he's talented. But, you know, the psychology of playing a quarterback, TJ, it can get in your head. And Philadelphia is intense, and the newspapers and the talk shows, and they're beating on you. And again, did with Carson Wentz, did you ever play with a quarterback who was talented? But, you know, when you were with Carson Palmer, was there a stretch ever where he was pushing? I mean, you take me to that space. What's it like?
What I see with Carson Wentz is, and we have to take into account, we got to stop talking about, oh, he almost won the MVP if he doesn't get hurt. You got to remember, they won the Super Bowl without him. They were, I believe, 5-6. He gets hurt again. And then Nick Foles goes 4-1 with the same team. And so, yes, Carson Wentz is talented physically. But is he talented mentally? Is he strong? He's lucky there's not fans in there. They would have completely booed him off the field for real and not just the crowd noise. And so you look, he took 8 sacks in the first game against Washington. 8 sacks. And the Eagles, their offensive line, oh, all these guys are hurt. Through the first 2 weeks of the season, if you look at it, they're top 5 offensive line in the league right now. So this falls on Carson Wentz. He has to get it fixed. But the thing is, who do they go to? They traded Nick Foles. Who are they going to go to? They don't have Nick Foles. Are you going to say, okay, here we go, Jalen Hurts. Here you go, Nate Sudfeld. I don't think so. If he loses this week to the Bengals, it's a wrap. It's just going to start snowballing. His confidence is already low. It's going to be completely gone. And so, again, he's very talented physically, but something in between the ears mentally isn't clicking for him.
Great stuff. I love having you on the show. You have a different perspective on everything. You've played the game. You know the game. And despite what you think, I cannot see the gray hair. It is not visible on camera. Mine are, yours aren't. Good seeing you again, buddy. Have a great weekend.
I appreciate you guys. You enjoy. You guys keep doing the great work you're doing.